This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. And greetings to everybody at Celebration Cinema here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. It's great to have you all here. Hello. And Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Grand Rapids. It's the first hour of our Friday program, and so, as always, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, neither a Republican or a Democrat, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives, and now in the United States Senate. I think of Bernie as America's senator. Senator Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Bernie. What's on the top of your mind today?
Well, it has been a busy week, as some of the listeners may know, in the Senate. We stayed up all night on Tuesday night dealing with Iraq, and I want everybody to understand that what was going on was not a vote on whether we should bring our troops home and end this disastrous war, but what was going on is that the Republicans were filibustering and did not, in fact, allow us to have a vote on the war. And because we don't have the 60 votes to stop that filibuster, that vote never took place. But we did get 53 votes, which suggests that a majority of the members of the United States Senate understand that this war has been a disaster, understand, as the national intelligence estimate showed us this week, that al-Qaeda is growing stronger in Pakistan. They are growing stronger in Afghanistan. Certainly they're growing stronger in Iraq, that Bush's whole policy, not only in Iraq, but in terms of fighting the very serious problem of terrorism, is not working. So you got a majority of senators now who want to end this war. Unfortunately, we're seeing Republican obstructionism in preventing us from having a vote by which majority rules. That's the bad news. The good news, Tom, is that you're seeing more and more Republicans, including those that don't have the guts to vote to end the war, distancing themselves from Bush, being critical of the war, and I think that in time we're going to see more and more of them coming over to our side.
Yeah, you know, the thing that really boggled my mind about this vote, Bernie, was the way it was portrayed in so much of the media. The Washington Times had a big headline saying that the bill to end or to wind down the war, whatever the phrase was, had failed. Well, the bill hadn't failed. The bill actually had enough majority votes to pass.
The bill was never voted on.
Right. The Republican obstruction effort succeeded.
Many people don't know this, and I think that if anything, what that all-night effort on Tuesday night showed the American people is that it's not majority rule, that it takes 60 votes for cloture to end debate, and we don't have the 60 votes. So I think, Tom, though, it was an important step forward. I think it was a good debate. I think many of our Republican friends who are following the president have very, very, very little to say, and I think the American people understand that. So that was one of the important issues this week in the Senate. The other important one took place at about midnight last night, where we finally, after a whole lot of obstructionism there, passed a very important bill, the higher ed bill. I don't have to tell any young people who are going to college or any parents who are paying for college that the cost of college is going off of the roof, that for many years the federal government has not been raising the kind of financial aid payments to students that it should have been. And what I'm happy to say is that last night at about midnight, after hours of obstructionism on the part of the Republicans, we finally voted by a good number to pass the higher ed bill, which will mean that Pell Grants, which are the major source of financial aid to low- and middle-class families, will go up from $4,300 to $5,100 next year, and then to $5,300 soon after that, that the income level for full Pell Grants will go from 20,000 to 30,000, so a lot more families will be eligible for full Pell Grants. And lastly, that included in it was a pretty strong debt forgiveness program, which says that if you work in the public service, you're a teacher, you're a child care worker, you are a nurse, you're a police officer, you're choosing to work in the public sector, and if you do that for 10 years, there will be a fairly significant debt forgiveness program by which your college loans will be forgiven. Some other provisions in there as well. But it marks, in my view, I think almost everybody's view, the strongest step forward that we have seen in recent years in trying to help families who are struggling with their college costs.
Bernie, you know, Thomas Jefferson started the University of Virginia as a free university so that anybody who had the intellectual capacity could attend college regardless of the circumstances of their birth. And I remember as a kid, the University of California was free. A lot of colleges
were
free.
That's right.
And do you see us ever going back to that?
Well, Tom,
defining higher education as a right instead of a privilege?
Tom, that's what I was on the floor of the Senate making exactly that point. Just stop and think. We don't have to go back to Thomas Jefferson. We can go back to when we were younger. You had great university and college systems in California, in New York City, some of the very best in the world, and tuition was zero.
Right.
And now, 30 years later, 20 years later, tuition is off of the wall. We're moving in the wrong direction. What studies tell us is that there are hundreds of thousands of low-income young people today in America who could do well in college, but are choosing not to go to college because they don't want to come out of school with $50,000 in debt. Think of what we lose as a nation in terms of that intellectual capital. And think of what those young people lose in terms of being able to advance their lives. It is crazy. And to my mind, when you look at education, I know, you know, a million people have said this, I think you got to look at it not as a cost per se, but as an investment for the future of our country. So I agree with you. Europe is doing a lot better than we are. You go to school in Germany, you come out, it's a free, basically it's publicly funded, as used to be the case in many states in America. So I believe that we have got to move in that direction, and that if you have the ability, and not everybody does, and you have the desire for a higher education, and not everybody does, but if you have those qualities, you're prepared to work hard, you should be able to go to college, come out without debt, regardless of the income of your family. I think that it would be
good. And we should make the same true for trade schools as well, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as you and I know, and as most listeners know, the high school degree today, 50 or 60 years ago was an important step forward if you want to get out into the job market. But today, a college degree in many ways is what a high school degree was 50 years ago. And I think we have to say, yes, we are paying for public education up through high school. We've got to continue that progress through college. So some of us are going to work hard to make that happen.
Great, great. Michael Moore's movie Sicko is now the fifth largest grossing documentary in all history. It's opening now next week in over, I think, 1,500 theaters.
Unbelievable.
Any movement in the Congress on?
Well, it's first of all, I think it's interesting. Moore himself, who was one of the great showmen of our time, it has to be. You know, you stop and you think that I have not seen the movie, but I'm familiar with its content. You know, what Moore is saying is what, you know, how many of us have been talking about for years and years. The current system is failing. We need to move toward a single-payer national health care program. The insurance companies are ripping off people right and left. We're paying far more per capita for health care than any other nation on earth. But what was interesting, you got all of the media out there, right? You have CBS, and you have NBC, and you got the New York Times. You got all of these things. And it takes Michael Moore to force that debate into the mainstream, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. Right now, certainly with Bush president, not only are you not going to get a national health care program, he is apparently, I hope he changes his mind, because even for Bush, he will look pretty stupid. He is threatening, Tom, to veto an expansion of the SCHIP program, which is, as listeners know, the health care program for our children. I have introduced legislation which would make sure that every child in America has health care. What passed the Senate Finance Committee was much more conservative. It was a $35 billion program which would provide, expand health care to kids to about 3 or 4 million, I believe. Bush, if you can believe it, is threatening to veto that legislation. So with this guy as president, obviously, we are a long way from doing what every other country on earth, major country on earth, has done, and that is guarantee health care to all people through a national health care program, which is always a far more cost-effective way to provide health care. I have been working on a side issue, is that we have to be conscious in this country, because our system is disintegrating so fast that we are fighting for more what we call federally qualified health clinics in Vermont and all over this country. We got a significant boost in funding to help build those clinics around America.
Good on you, Bernie. That's great. That's step by step. We're gonna make this thing work, this country work. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Stick around.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. His website, sanders.senate.gov. And it's actually a great resource. A lot of great news there and all that sort of thing. So, Bernie, shall we take some calls?
Absolutely.
Okay. Myrna in Puyallup, Washington. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Okay, it's Puyallup, and thank you. I just
Puyallup,
want to tell you that I am so proud of both of you for using the airways to teach us and to let us know what's going on. The lay people just don't have enough avenues for this, and I'm just so pleased with you. But what I want to say is that last night I heard a report that twice as many East Indian students will be going to college than in the United States, three times as many will be going in from China students going to college. That is going to upset the balance completely in the United States if we don't do something. Well, their population does detect something of that. But if we don't do something about helping the students here.
Right. Well, Myrna, that's a very good point. And what is of real concern to me and many other people in Congress and millions of Americans is that if you look at universities around America and you go to their science departments, their engineering departments, we have, as Americans, we're just not graduating engineers, we're not graduating scientists, we're not graduating mathematicians. And that speaks to a couple of things about the quality of our educational system, but also the fact that college is becoming so expensive that we're seeing it. People coming out in debt, it's affecting their career choices, et cetera, et cetera. But as Tom and I were discussing a moment ago, it is my belief that if we are serious about being the kind of democracy that we must be, serious about functioning effectively in the global economy, we've got to open up the doors to college and graduate school to all Americans, regardless of their income. It is a major issue that we have got to address.
Yeah, this the GI Bill really effectively did that in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
One of the great pieces
transformed America.
One of the great pieces of legislation ever passed in modern American history had a huge impact, not only for the individuals, but because so many people got quality educations, they became far more productive citizens and helped our economy grow in a very important way.
Yeah. James in New Paltz, New York, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon. I want to reiterate the sentiments of the first caller. Senator Sanders, a quick question. I apologize because I've asked this once before, but I seem to have NAFTA on the brain and free trade, and I'm wondering when will this great debate that I envision ever come to fruition?
Okay. Well, let me tell you, I don't know if it's going to be a great debate, but you're going to see a serious debate, unlike what you have seen in past years, pretty soon. Two things. The reauthorization for fast track, giving the president the right to unilaterally negotiate trade agreements, expired. It expired at the end of June. The president did not come back to Congress to ask for a reauthorization, and it may well be that he knew he would not be able to get it. So that's number one. That's a very important step forward. Fast track does not exist today. Number two, there are four trade agreements coming down the pike that were negotiated under Fast Track, and that is Panama, Peru, Colombia, and South Korea. In my view, you are going to see much stronger opposition to those trade agreements than you have in the past. I will be involved strongly in opposing them. When we try to figure out why it is that poverty in America is increasing, why the middle class is shrinking, why we are losing millions of good-paying jobs, certainly one, not the only, but one of the reasons is our disastrous trade policy. And if you look around America today, you're seeing almost no new factories, no new plants being built in the United States of America. What you are seeing is that those plants are being built in China. They're being built in other countries where workers make pennies an hour. It is becoming a major crisis, the degree to which we are losing our productive capabilities. That even impacts the military. Recently, I was talking to the Secretary of the Army, an issue that we're working very hard on along with other senators, that we can't even get the kind of armored vehicles our soldiers need. We are producing some of them in the United States, but some of them are being produced abroad. We don't have enough steel to do some of the kinds of work we need to rebuild our infrastructure. So I believe that if we are serious about creating the kind of economy that we need major transformations in the way we do our economy, and certainly we need radical changes in our trade policies.
I saw there was I mentioned this on the air a couple of days ago. There's an article in the Financial Times about how the average tariff in most of the industrializing countries in the world, import tariffs, are around 30%. Our average import tariff here in the United States is around 2%. And the WTO is calling on all of them to drop it down to where we are. They want everybody to be free
trade. Well, the proof is in the pudding. We have a $700-plus billion trade deficit, harder and harder to find products made in the United States of America.
Right, and these other countries are doing fine, thank you very much, and we're getting screwed. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Brunch with Bernie, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back with Bernie Sanders.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America.
And here we are on the radio. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders, the first hour of our Friday program, as always has been for 3 years or more. Senator Bernie Sanders answering your questions. And we're broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinemas in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with our affiliate, our Clear Channel station, WTKG, here. And a special tip of the hat to Phil Tower, the guy who runs the station. And Phil, thanks so much for making this all work. And there's a live studio audience, and some of the folks in the audience have questions for you, Bernie, as well. So here is Jim in Kentwood. And, Jim, you are live with Bernie. You got to talk right into that mic.
Senator Sanders, good afternoon.
Hi, Jim.
I recently became concerned about terrorism during the recent President Ford burial, and I thought, gee, couldn't this be a target for terrorists up here in Grand Rapids when all those big shots were in town? And I remembered that Miami Tribune political cartoon with the atom bomb going off showing Grand Rapids there, and I thought, who am I to believe about these reports about how strong Al-Qaeda is, the president or our intelligence agencies?
Jim, in my view, and I think in most people's view, terrorism is a very, very serious issue. And I think you will find very few knowledgeable people who will tell you, tragically, that another attack against the United States could not take place, that it could succeed. And we've got to do everything that we can in a dozen different ways to protect the American people. As you know, recently the intelligence agencies who come together to publish what's called a national intelligence estimate have concluded that Al-Qaeda today is as strong or stronger than it was before 9/11. And that tells me that instead of having our troops bogged down in a civil war in Iraq and us spending half a trillion dollars there, are that we've got to refocus our energies on Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups as we bring our troops home from Iraq. But I think that's the conclusion I reach from that.
The real guys who may be out
right.
to get us. Scott in San Diego, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator Sanders, and good morning, Tom. First of all, a quick shout-out. We're lucky enough here in San Diego. John Conyers will be here this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Our local radio station website has more details, KLSD. It's also Progressive Democrats of America here in San Diego has more information on their
That's
website.
Great.
Senator, this morning I read in the Washington Post that the Bush administration has decided that its executive privilege trumps all, and that a U.S. attorney would not be permitted to bring contempt charges or convene a grand jury in an executive privilege case. This is, I believe, the constitutional crisis you were discussing.
Yes. Now, I tend to agree with you. You have a president who, to my mind, has a very, very, what's the word, unreal attitude as to what the powers of the presidency are. He believes in a concept of executive privilege, which to my mind is way, way, way over the line and has total disregard, I think, for the United States Congress. And I think you're right. He may be provoking a constitutional crisis. I think what we have seen is that after 6 years of a rubber stamp Congress under the Republicans, finally, in the House and in the Senate, you're having chair people of important committees starting to ask the questions that the American people for a long time wanted asked. And it's just not good enough for me that this president says, sorry, my administration is not going to testify. That's wrong. And I hope he changes his mind, but I think he may be right.
You know, Bernie, most of our presidents have been attorneys, and many of our legislators are schooled in the law. Bush has a master's degree in business administration. Corporations are set up like kingdoms. They're not set up like democracies. Do you think that might be influencing his thinking?
Maybe, but I think he has just a, this view is, I will do it my way. I mean, it's not only his relationship to Congress, it's his relationship to the international communities, his relationship to the military. He thinks that he is right, and he will do it the way he wants to do it. And I think it's time, not only in terms of dealing with George W. Bush, but in terms of setting precedents, that the Congress remind this president that we live in a democracy and that he's going to have to listen to what Congress says.
Yeah. Bonnie in Sacramento, California, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning. I was originally calling to talk about using the nuclear option to change the Senate rules to preventing filibuster and allowing up and down straight majority votes in the Senate, as Randy Rhodes talked to Senator Reid of Rhode Island yesterday. But I just got across my C-SPAN page, Capital News page, a note that said that the VP is temporarily acting as president, serving as president, and there is no additional link, and I can't find anything else online about it.
Well, I think, Bonnie, I'm not 100% sure of your reference here. If there is a tie, if it's a 50-50 tie, then the vice president casts, obviously, the deciding vote.
As president of the Senate.
As president of the Senate, that's right.
Not of the United States.
Right, of course. I don't think we would have the votes to do it, and I'm not sure that it's a good idea. But if we do it now with a very, very, very slim majority, you know, in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, the Republicans can do it as well. It's an issue worth discussing. Rules are not made in cement. We went from 66 votes some years back now to 60. But it would be a radical change in the way the Senate has done business for many, many years. Honestly, it's not something that I have really thought about in terms of the pros and the cons. But if it works for us, it will work for the other side as well. We have to be mindful of that.
Okay. Scott in Springfield, Illinois, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hey, Tom, I had a question for Bernie. I know that the oil companies used to have a maximum amount that they had to pay for oil. If the oil got above $35 a barrel, they didn't have to pay for any oil that they pumped off of public land. And I was wondering, since it ain't been below $35 in 7 years, is there any way we can up that?
Yes. Scott, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not on that committee. That is certainly something that not only is the are the committees looking at, I think that they have implemented. We passed, well, we didn't pass in the Senate, but we lost by two votes. I think we eventually will pass a tax package which undoes a lot of the loopholes given to the oil companies and uses that money to promote solar, wind, and other renewable-type energies. I do believe that that is one of the issues that was visited in that tax bill.
Bernie, one of the folks here you're the guy. Your name is...
Dante.
Whoop, try it again.
There you go, the light works. Yeah. My name is Dante. I'm from Granville.
Okay, and you had a question for Senator Sanders.
Oh, yeah. Senator Sanders, I want to first congratulate you on being a patriot and fighting for the rights of the American citizens. And I really appreciate that. The question I have is, what's going on with Harriet Myers and the White House with all the things they're doing? What about inherent contempt? Because nothing else is working and we have no way of stopping them. But with this, the sergeant of arms can go in and stop and arrest them. Is there any way that you can help with this?
Well, I don't think the sergeant of arms is going to go in and arrest her. But as we mentioned earlier, I think we have a president who is provoking a constitutional crisis. And I think you may very well, in the not-too-distant future, see a major, major case go to the courts testing the power of the president. I think, as I said earlier, this president is way out of line in his perception of what executive privilege is. And I think he very much is undermining the role of the Congress and the constitutional separation of powers.
Russ in Florida, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Senator, what legal standing, enforceability, do all these signing statements, the executive orders, directives President Bush has been, writing have?
Well, Russ, you raise again the same issue in a different venue here. As listeners know, you have a president who says, yes, I'm going to sign the legislation, but by the way, I have decided that provisions in it are, in my view, George W. Bush's view, unconstitutional, and I'm not going to enforce it. I think, again, that is an outrage. That is an issue that is being also dealt with right now in Congress. What is going on now, again, is that after 6 years of inactivity, 6 years in which the Republican-led Congress virtually asked zero questions about the actions or the behavior of the White House, you're seeing committee after committee after committee raising many issues, including the signing business. I think it's just an outrage. If the president wants to veto something, let him veto it. But you can't pick and choose. That, to me, seems to be grossly unconstitutional.
Yeah. John in Cincinnati, Ohio. Just about a half a minute here, John. Quick question.
Yeah, I've got a question for the senator as to why the president's going to veto the bill for the children's health insurance program. Isn't it the fact that they're going to try and increase the limit to 400% of the poverty level and try and redefine a child as a 25-year-old?
Well, there are a lot of reasons as to why. I think the major reason is the president says he doesn't like, quote-unquote, government health care, end of quote, and sees this legislation increasing the role that the government has in health care. He would prefer it rest with the insurance companies. For a president who comes from Texas, which has the highest rate, I believe, of uninsured children in America, I think his actions are a real disgrace.
Indeed. Disgrace is a great word. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. You can drop by our blog at airamerica.com, our live chat room at tomhartman.com. Yeah, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
And to right or wrong, and to meek or strong, it is known to scream from the wall.
Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Celebration Cinema, WTKG, third channel in Grand Rapids. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website with us. And one of our studio audience members here, folks are dropping by and saying hi here at the Celebration Cinema North, is Martha in East Grand Rapids. And Martha has a question for Bernie. Martha, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I'm a big fan, as most of us are here in the audience.
And thank you, Martha.
As well. It's an honor to speak to you. The Military Commissions Act, which passed in October with the vote of our Democratic Senator Stabenow, bothers us, of course, because it sort of erased habeas corpus. I know that she is now sponsoring a bill before the Senate that will bring back habeas corpus to us all, which would be nice. What chance does that have getting through the Senate?
Well, thank you for asking that important question, Martha. If I am not mistaken, I don't think I am, legislation similar to that would restore habeas corpus, I believe, left past the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I think we are making some progress on that.
Great. Thank you very much, Martha.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Paul in Auburn, Washington, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Sanders, for
Paul?
Providing this opportunity for us to talk to you. I had kind of two short questions. I just wanted to follow up is that you've mentioned a couple of times that we're facing a constitutional crisis. Is it time where we need to finally step up and say impeachment is now an option on the table? And the second one is to follow up on your children's health insurance. Do we have enough votes to override a veto if President Bush does decide to veto it?
Good question. Let me say something about children's health insurance. In the state of Vermont, we have a program called the Dr. Dinosaur Program, which covers not only lower-income children but many middle-class families as well. And, you know, Tom, I get around the state of Vermont a whole lot. I have never talked to a parent who was not very, very positive about that children's health program. And I think we need something.
It was a big hit.
You know, we need to expand that concept all over America. In terms of the constitutional crisis and impeachment, you know, as I have said many times, we are having a very, very difficult time getting 60 votes on the floor of the Senate. We're not going to get 66 votes for an impeachment. I think what we have got to do is continue the work that the American people want us to do on health care, on ending this war, on rebuilding our economy for the middle class, et cetera, et cetera. And I think the committees are beginning to do a good job, as I think we've heard this afternoon in many areas, challenging this president and, if necessary, taking him to court over many of the things that he is doing.
Okay. Bob in Renton, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi there. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I would like to know, why hasn't this administration or the current Congress introduced a new major labor movement bill like a NASA project to check 100% of all the containers coming into this country?
In point of fact, there has been progress made. The Republicans have been delaying, although I think we may get to it next week, the Homeland Security bill, which will, in fact, include many significant improvements over what we have right now, including accepting the recommendations of the 9/11 commission. So I think you will see that we are making some significant progress. And you're absolutely right. The port situation is a very, very, very serious problem. And I know that I have voted over the years to substantially improve that concern.
John in Denver, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom. And Senator Bernie, before I go any further, I'd like to say that aside from my recently deceased father, you are the greatest American hero I've ever had the chance to speak.
That's very kind of you, and thank you.
Thank you for what you do. I'd like to make a statement, and then I have a question. My statement is that I just think it's absolutely deplorable that while the Republicans were in the majority, the Republicans called all the shots, they held the hearings, they stifled the word of the Democrat, they did everything, and they were in control. The Democrats are now in the majority, and the Republicans call all the shots, they're stifling the word of the majority. I mean, we didn't use the filibuster, they did. I'm just tired of this. Your guest that you had yesterday, Tom, the gentleman from Reagan's administration, thinks along the lines that I've been thinking along the lines of, that these guys are boxed in a corner, and they're really only their chance out is some major disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I'm not here to say that, you know, I'm a conspiracy nut or whatever, but I'm not so naive to think that there aren't conspiracies. And these guys definitely, if they didn't have something to do the last one, they certainly did ignore it. And the one glimmer of hope that I heard yesterday was that potentially the military won't go along with this.
You're talking about a strike on Iran, John?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, we just have a minute before we have to wrap this hour up.
The people of America. But if what can we do to influence our Congress people and our senators to just something?
All right, let me. There's not much time left. I have introduced legislation. I think Senator Webb of Virginia has introduced legislation. Other people have said it absolutely clearly, as clearly as we can. The president does not have the authority to unilaterally wage war against Iran. And again, if he were to do this, and I hear people saying that, to be honest with you, I don't think he will. But certainly that would provoke, my God, a major constitutional crisis as well. But I would say I don't want people to think that the Republicans, are running the show. We have raised the minimum wage. We have just passed yesterday in the Senate a major higher education bill. We are going to pass a substantial bill improving children's health care in America. We are beginning to do some very serious investigations. So I want people to appreciate that while things are not moving as fast as we would like, some progress is in fact being made.
Thanks so much, Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is website. Bernie, you're great. Thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Always great.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. You're tuned into the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A couple of interesting stories here. The first, I'm just astounded that Bill O'Reilly, or Bill Orally, as Keith Olbermann lovingly calls him, would have opened this can of worms. He sent a reporter to harass the CEO of JetBlue, because JetBlue was a corporate sponsor of the Daily Kos convention. And this from the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. After being subjected to a smear campaign by Fox News host Bill O'Reilly for its in-kind donation to the upcoming yearly Kos convention, JetBlue has asked the yearly Kos organizers to remove its name from the convention's website. O'Reilly celebrated the move on his show last night. And this is mind-boggling. I wonder, first of all, JetBlue is also a sponsor of Fox Television. So it'll be interesting to see if they pull their advertising there. I mean, how much is Bill O'Reilly's demagoguery going to cost Rupert Murdoch? That's the first question that comes to mind. The second is, I'm just curious how long it's going to be before some of the bloggers, some of the folks at the Daily Kos convention, or the yearly Kos convention, start showing up at the homes of the CEOs of the advertisers on Fox News Channel and on Bill O'Reilly's radio program and asking them if they support some of the outrageous things that Bill O'Reilly has said in the past. Or some of his guests, for that matter, Michelle Malkin and whatnot, who are regulars on the program, which would be the equivalent, basically, of the kind of questions that were being asked of the president of or the CEO of JetBlue. And if that happens, if the diarists, if the folks from the yearly Kos convention start showing up outside the apartments or the homes and following around and harassing the CEOs and chairman and whatnot of these advertisers to Fox News and to O'Reilly's show, is then this going to potential for, then are we going to end up with right wingers doing the same thing with advertisers on the left? I just can't believe Bill O'Reilly started this. It is not good for him. It's not good for Fox. It's not good for, obviously, the Kos are for JetBlue. It's not good for the medium of political talk radio. Forget left or right. it's not good for the medium of political talk radio, because political talk radio, you know, setting aside the old-fashioned notion of the firewall, but political talk radio really does exist in an area where advertisers, by and large, I realize there's a blacklist for Air America, and there's also a blacklist for the Rush Limbaugh show. There are some advertisers who simply don't want to be involved with any show that's political. But by and large, most advertisers, they just say, hey, you know, I want to reach a couple million people. I mean, our program reaches 2.5-3 million people, something like that. We want to reach a couple million people. You know, here's the money. Here, you know, buy the ads, that kind of thing. And if the day comes that that's perceived as a political statement rather than a commercial station, then not only is the yearly COS convention at risk, not only is the progressive talk radio at risk, but conservative talk radio is at risk. Bill O'Reilly has put a scalpel to his own throat here, metaphorically. And I'm boggled by it. Special thanks to one of the folks out in our audience here at the Celebration Cinema who gave me a copy of this morning's Detroit Free Press, this article by John Dingell. John Dingell is the congressman from Michigan. I believe John Dingell represents one of the Detroit suburbs. I could be wrong in that. He's been in Congress forever. In fact, I believe he was in Congress back when I lived in Michigan, which was back in the 70s. When Louise and I left Michigan, we were both born here and grew up here. And the article, John Dingell, he says, President George W. Bush has not given up his fight to privatize Social Security. That's spooky and scary news. He's simply doing it much more quietly. If you don't believe me, consider, this is John Dingell speaking, Congressman Dingell. If you don't believe me, consider whom the president has appointed Deputy Commissioner of Social Security. Dr. Andrew Biggs, a man who has dedicated his career to killing one of the federal government's most successful programs. Now, how, you ask, is it possible that this could happen? I mean, Max Baucus, the Democrat from Montana, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, this is the committee that a secretary or assistant secretary of the Social Security Department would have to go before to be approved of, has said that he would not take up the nomination of Biggs before his committee because of Biggs's, quote, support for the failed idea of privatization, and that that support would reopen a settled debate about the future of Social Security reform. So here we have Senator Baucus saying, we're not even going to consider this guy. He's so toxic. My language, not his, but, you know, the essence of it. So what does Bush do? It is a recess appointment. Boggs was, again, quoting Congressman John Dingell, Boggs was slipped into this job with a recess appointment in April. Amazing. Because of the recess appointment, Boggs can serve until the end of the 110th Congress without proper confirmation by the Senate. Biggs, back now the guy who is now the number two person in Social Security, wrote in 1999 in a paper titled Social Security Reform and the New Deal Paradigm. Oh, that New Deal, that's a terrible thing. It only brought about the American middle class. We can't have that, right? Biggs, good conservative that he is, he said, and I'm quoting him now, this is the number two guy in the Social Security Department, slipped in there by Bush with a recess appointment. He said, and I quote, Social Security reform featuring personal retirement accounts doesn't send one liberal sacred cow to the slaughterhouse. It sends the whole herd. This is incredible. I mean, this Mr. Biggs sees this as the way to destroy Social Security, and therefore George W. Bush, who in 1977, as I recall, it was 78, whatever the year was, campaigned for the House of Representatives from Texas and lost, by the way, on his signature issue, the corporatization of Social Security. Take it out of the hands of government, put it in the hands of private corporations. And the people of Texas soundly said, no. No thanks. Ain't going to do that. It's Anything Goes Friday. Our phone number, 1-866-303-2270. If you want to blog, airamerica.com. Click on my name, and our blog is there. It's actually labeled Louise Hartman's blog. And you can post your messages there. There's also links to our live chat room where you can drop in and say hi, and I send my greetings along today to the folks in our live chat room. I'm unable to get in. The computer I'm on here won't let me update the Java program, and so I can't get in. It's just one of those weird security things that you come across from time to time. And but greetings to you all. And, of course, there's also our message board over at TomHartmann.com, all completely open, along with all of our archives, show-by-show archives and audio clip archives. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Diane in Waterford, Michigan. Hey, Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you. I've listened to your show, and I just love it.
Thank you.
I faxed a letter to Congressmen Conyers, Dingell, Levin, and Kilpatrick. Those are our Democratic House members from Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Defending this inaction because they don't have support for impeachment, it's not ethical. It's time to expose the vice president, the attorney general, and the president. Once they start the congressional hearings, a lot of things will be exposed that the major media will have to cover.
Well, yes and no. And first of all, let me say, Bernie and I and I think all of our longtime listeners know that he and I disagree on this issue. And we've had our fight on the air about it a couple of times. And we just don't do it anymore. He says his piece and that's his piece. And I would encourage people to lobby him about that, by the way, at sanders.senate.gov. You can contact him. But the fact of the matter is, that said, with my strong support of impeachment, that said, an impeachment hearing is no different than the kind of hearings that John Dingell Henry Waxman and John Conyers are the lead ones, are doing right now. Any committee has the power of a subpoena. Any committee has the power of contempt. You don't need an impeachment hearing to find out whether or not this administration is committing crimes. In fact, it may be the least efficient way to do it. So there are some who are suggesting, and Bernie is among them, and I think there is some logic to it, of let's let these committees go a little farther. It might be a matter of a couple of weeks. It might be a matter of a month. It may not be very long at all, but let's have them, force Harriet Myers in here. Let's get some of this testimony. Let's get some of these documents. Let's identify these crimes and be able to say, okay, now, look at this. How could we not impeach given this? And, at the point that it becomes just incredibly, mind-bogglingly obvious to average Americans, that's when you do it. I think that the average Americans are there. But, all of Congress is not convinced of that yet, and we all need to be convincing them. It would be a fine thing. So, anyhow, that's the step. By the way, the Vice President Cheney, acting president, it's going to be because the president is having a colonoscopy on Saturday. For 2.5 hours, Dick Cheney will be president. I'm not real concerned about it. 20 minutes past here.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes. Garbage tugs, yes, you better.
Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartmann here with you. Welcome back to the program. Sorry about the wrong time cue there if you're resetting your clock. I'm working in a studio I'm not all that familiar with, and we've got a bunch of different times looking at me. So anyhow, we'll be taking your calls and also taking questions from the studio audience here at Celebration Cinema, WTKG, Grand Rapids, Michigan, where we're broadcasting live from. One particularly mind-bogglingly ironic thing here. Oh, before I get to that, I also want to say hi to my brother Steve, who showed up. He lives down the road in Lowell. And Steve Harbin, hello. He's out there someplace. There you go. And Louise and I here are having a fine time. George W. Bush, this is unbelievable. You get it that there was this military appropriations bill, the defense authorization bill, that had a pay raise for the soldiers in it and said that within 120 days they have to start being pulled out, and by April they all have to be out. It was filibustered by the Republicans. The Republicans blocked it. So Bush calls a press conference and says, and I quote, Congress has failed to act on a bill that would provide funds to upgrade our equipment for our troops in Iraq and provides a pay raise for our military. Isn't that incredible? Here Bush is attacking the Democrats in Congress for failing to pass a bill that the Republicans filibustered so it couldn't be passed. And yet, I guarantee you, that's the soundbite that's going to run. Linda in Ionia, Michigan?
Yes.
Hey, I've been through Ionia a number of times in my many years living in Michigan. What's up, Linda?
Well, I've got a question regarding something I've been reading a lot about lately and hearing on some of the different talk shows, and that would be that the Bush-Cheney regime have all the legislation and judicial in place to actually cancel elections, declare martial law, use the Constitution for a kitty litter box, and make good on his joke that a dictatorship would be easier as long as I'm the dictator.
Right.
What are your views on this possibility actually happening, and do we still have any type of safeguards in place that would prevent these thugs from taking over?
Yeah. It's a really, really, really tough question, Linda, because, first of all, the ability to effectively suspend the Constitution arguably went back to the Civil War. I mean, you know, Lincoln used some mm-hmm. of those provisions, powers of emergency, but really it got on steroids with Nixon during the Vietnam War. There was an executive order that Nixon issued that basically gave him the ability to declare a national emergency and suspend elections and all kinds of stuff. Kissinger, a big proponent of that. Fortunately, it never happened, although, you know, Kissinger had to talk him out of a number of things, like dropping nuclear bombs in Vietnam. The question in my mind is the boiling frog question. You know, the old Dan Quinn's metaphor from Ishmael of if you put a frog in a pot of water, cold water, and slowly heat it up, it'll just sit there and have a good old time until it falls asleep and then gets cooked. And on the other hand, if you drop a frog into a hot pot of water, it'll just go, whoa, and just go flying out. And I remember reading Milton Mayer's book, They Thought They Were Free, which I've quoted from many times in this program, where Milton Mayer, who was one of the best American journalists, he worked, I believe, for the Chicago Tribune back in the 1950s, and a guy who was himself Jewish and had friends and family who had perished in the Holocaust, went to Germany, he'd never been there before, went to Germany after World War II, and befriended 10 average people, you know, a college professor, a baker, a small businessman, who had all become members of the Nazi Party. And, you know, ask them, you know, how did this happen? How did you guys go along with this? Why, you know, how did the country get swept up into it? And over and over and over again, these people said it happened with sufficient gradualness, I don't know what the word is, it happened sufficiently gradually that there was never that one big threshold moment where everybody would go, what? In fact, I remember one of the academicians, one of the professors, he said, if the shipping off of the Jews in the train cars had happened the week after the Buy Jewish stickers had gone on in the stores, then there probably would have been this incredible outrage because it would have happened so fast it would have been obvious. But instead, it took about 3 years for that transition to happen. And what concerns me is that we're seeing this, you know, it's been five, six mm-hmm. years, which is about the time that it took Hitler. We're seeing this gradual erosion of very real rights and very little protest because everybody says, well, that's not quite big enough to get out on the streets for.
Right.
And yet in aggregate, they're all, I mean, they're mind-boggling. So I guess my hope is that there will be some kind of a tipping point, that we will reach some kind of a threshold. I suspect that if they were to attack Iran, that may well be it. On the other hand, and that said, I also don't think, you know, the Germans had only had a democracy for a decade. Democracy is a very new experience for the Germans when Hitler took over. We've had a democracy here for 231 years. It's in our DNA. So the big hope, optimism, my source of optimism is that if Bush were to try and flip this thing, if he were to absolutely declare unilaterally these kinds of powers and use them against people like you, Linda, and me, that the police wouldn't go along with it, the military wouldn't go along with it, the Congress would raise hell, that the newspapers, even the conservatives would be out there speaking. I mean, you've heard in the last 2 days on this program, conservatives speaking out.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I got a letter from old George W. It said, son, I hate to trouble you, but this war of mine is going bad. It's time for me to roll those dice. I know you've already been there twice, but I am sending you back to Baghdad. George W. told the nation, this is not an escalation, this is just a surge toward victory. Just to win my little war, I'm sending 20,000 more to help me save Iraq from Iraqis. And so I made it to Iraq in time for one more sneak attack. Into my old battalion I was sent. We'd drive around in our Humvees, listening to the Black Eyed Peas and speaking fondly of our president. George W. told the nation, this is not an escalation, this is just a surge toward victory. Just to win my little war, I'm saying.
Indeed. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. We're broadcasting live. WTKG hosting us here at the Celebration Cinemas in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Robert in Sacramento, California. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Bernie.
Bernie's gone now, but
oh, he is. Okay, Tom. Yeah. The first responders, 500 of them that showed up at the King Commission, were turned away, and only 20 were allowed to testify. One, a 20-year veteran of the a janitor of the WTC, was the last man
right.
out of the
by,
tower.
By the Keene Commission, you're referring to the 9/11 Commission. I think that's almost
I am. And what I'm yeah. saying is this, is that all of their testimony was sealed for reasons of national security by this criminal enterprise we call our government. Now, if you go to YouTube and just do a search of WTC 9/11 bombs, you can clearly hear the bombs going off. Their testimony was that there were bombs in the building. That was covered up by the Bush administration. The whole 9/11 story is a lie. Congress needs to investigate. I don't care if they're scared or what. We're in a time when this needs to come out. And if it doesn't come out, another attack could happen. The best way to prevent one from happening is to investigate 9/11. We've got all the evidence. We've worked for almost 6 years. You can find it anywhere on the net. So.
Yeah, 911truth.org. There's a whole bunch of great sites out there. Sunlight is the best disinfectant, and we really need it for this. And the one area where I would argue with you, Robert, is when you said the criminal enterprise that is our government. I would say that our government is intact. The vast majority of the people in our government are good civil servants who are doing their jobs and doing them well. It's the Bush administration and the Republican Party that are the criminal enterprise.
Well, Tom, we have RICO statutes, and we need to apply those across the board, right from the get-go, the election in 2000, 2004, all the way through. There's even widespread investigations that have gone on by journalists that this criminal enterprise uses drug money, massive amounts of it. They're growing massive amounts of heroin in Afghanistan.
No, that goes back to the Reagan administration. Robert, I'm right there with you. I just think it's really important that we differentiate between the government, which is us. This is the United States of America, our government, and the people who are holding it captive, because they're different. And so the Republican Party and the Bush administration, who are tying this thing up and who have committed crimes. I mean, admitted crimes. Some of them have already gone to jail. The Reagan administration, and more people from the Reagan administration go to prison than any administration in the history of the United States. And frankly, I think they just scratched the surface in terms of investigations. But let's not buy into the conservative meme, the conservative thought virus, the anti-government thought virus that says, oh, well, the government's criminal, because then the next step is to say, oh, well, let's get rid of the government. You do that. Yes, let's get rid of the government. Okay, do away with Social Security Administration, do away with the Education Department, do away with Medicare, and turn it all over to Citibank. Right? You see where I'm going with that? So rather, I think language matters. And when we're talking about criminal behavior, let's limit it, because really that's where the vast majority of it is, to the Bush administration and the Republicans in the House and Senate, and the Republican Party in general, their caging operations and everything else, many of the Republican governors involved in this, And point out exactly where it's going on, rather than indicting a form of government that has been a beacon for the world and has served us well, more or less, better sometimes than others, for 231 years now. But I absolutely agree with you. We need to have an investigation of 9/11. We really need to have an investigation. Scott in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I've been wanting to ask this question for a while now. Before I ask the question, I got a quick comment. The latest Osama outrage, they have just released a videotape of Osama, and he's got the latest Harry Potter book that is yet to be released, and he's reading the ending.
horrendous.
And the copyright police are going after him.
This is horrendous.
That's, you know, that will mobilize the U.S. government. Yeah. If you rip off the Harry Potter book, man, they're all over you like white on rice. They are after you. But, you know, you fail to get Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora, that's all right. Yeah.
If he had ever entered a Reader's Digest sweepstakes, they would have found him in a minute.
You bet.
Because no matter where I've ever moved, sooner or later, the Reader's Digest sweepstakes catches up with me.
Yeah,
anyway.
But Bush isn't running that one, so it seems to work well.
Anyway, here's my serious question. Some time ago, I heard or read that there are enough renewable resources on the planet to make everybody on the planet the equivalent of a millionaire. And I ran this by a Republican friend of mine, a conservative friend of mine, and he said that even if that were so, and the stuff were equally divided, and everybody was on an even keel and an even playing field, that within a generation it would revert back to where it is now, with 5% of the people holding 95% of the wealth. And
I think you're a wise man.
I wanted to run that by you.
Yeah, I think he's right. And also, it depends on what you mean by a millionaire. I mean, if you meant that everybody in the world could consume at the level that millionaires consume, no. Actually, given current technology, I mean, given the application of current technology, we have the technology to do this differently and better. And Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour, is all about that, or a good chunk of it is. But
the
fact of the matter is that if every one of the 6.5 billion people on planet Earth right now, half of whom live on $2 a day, if every one of them was consuming and producing waste at the level of an American Appalachian family of four living in poverty at about $14,000 a year, you would require four planet Earths just to provide the natural resources.
Well, no, what I mean is the excuse that the conservatives gives is that there's not enough to go around. And I'm saying that there is enough to go around, and it doesn't have to be at the expense of the planet. In terms of renewable resources, right, it's all there. It's just that the wealth and the goodies are inequitable in their distribution.
Yeah, well, yes, absolutely that. But also, how much is too much is a really complex issue, Scott. You know, we had all of human history. Produced at the time of Christ about a half billion or about a quarter billion people. We hit a half billion people by the year 1000. Then we started using coal pretty aggressively in parts of the world. We hit our first 1 billion people in the year 1800. And up until that point, we were using existing sunlight. Sun falling on the earth, plants catch that sun. We eat the plants. We eat the animals that eat the plants. We use the plants for heat. We use them for everything. I mean, you know, for housing and everything. And then in the 19th century, in the 1800s, we started using oil, which is sunlight that fell to the earth 300 million years ago. And we're burning through that stuff at the rate of about a million years worth of sunlight a day right now. And so from 1800, so the second billion people, so 1800, we had only 1 billion people on planet Earth in 1800. I don't think anybody looking at 1800 would say that the world was overpopulated. The second billion people only took 130 years, 1930. So when Franklin Roosevelt came into office, there were only 2 billion people on the planet. You know, less than a third of what there is now. The third billion only took 30 years, 1960. When John Kennedy was inaugurated, there were fewer than half as many people as there are on the planet. And then the fourth billion was 14 years, 17 years, 1987, 1960, 1974, yeah, 14 years, 1987, 13 years for the fifth billion, and 11 years for the sixth billion, 1999. And so now I would submit to you that we really probably are past the point where human population is doing so much damage to the earth simply because of our presence. We're using a quarter of all the photosynthetic output of the planet right now. And the consequence of that is that we're driving all these other species extinct. It's true that we could dramatically reduce our footprint by over 90% using existing technology. But whether we have the will and the ability to do that is a whole another question. And,
well, when people agree that it's time to do something, it'll probably be too late.
That's the problem. That's the problem, is that we have, you know, culturally we tend to react to crises rather than be proactive, and that's the long history. You know, Jared Diamond's book, Collapse, that's the long history of the human race. But it's an interesting conundrum, Scott. And, you know, Malthus was right and he was wrong. And it's true of all of these guys all down the centuries. And really what we need to be doing is talking about this stuff and working on this stuff and trying to get it right. Thanks a lot for the call, Scott. Appreciate it. Alma in San Diego, California. Hey, Alma.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. What's up?
I I was just listening to your show yesterday with Paul Craig Roberts, who was on.
Yes.
And he was talking about how the people are in the way and the Constitution is in the way. And it got me thinking that Cheney is running the U.S. like a corporation. But if we are the shareholders in his big corporation, he's just running roughshod over the Constitution. Even shareholders have to hold their board of directors responsible. And, you know, why aren't we able to hold him to a higher standard? And maybe we should be going after shareholders in the companies that he's still running, like Halliburton, and asking them to hold him accountable, since this is
the way. Maybe why Halliburton is going to become a United Arab Emirates company. They're moving to the Middle East.
Yeah, he's still receiving funds as a board director, or how is he receiving money?
He's not on the board any longer. He's a major stockholder, and he's got a lot of stock options. And as those options roll over, he gets money from them. He's donating a lot of them to charity, you know, which was the commitment he made before he became president. But last year, he paid more taxes than his paycheck as vice president. So there's something sneaky going on there. Alma, thanks a lot for the call and for pointing it out. I don't think that we're shareholders. We are citizens, and there's a significant difference. And as citizens, we have a lot of remedies available to us, and we need to be using them. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
It's like everything and nothing leads to wisdom. It's like no one really meant what they meant. It's like every man's a king, every house a kingdom. It's like Joe McCarthy was our acting president. Everything's A-okay in the USA, in the good old USA.
Well, one of these days we'll get back there. We definitely will. We definitely will. Ellen Ratner with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen.
Well, how are you doing? Very interesting today, the Center for Constitutional Rights, the organization my brother's president of, but he did not argue the case, went before the Organization of American States Intercommission for Human Rights and basically talked about Guantanamo, talked about habeas corpus, and in regards as it responded to the military commissions. Well, the OAS heard their case, and apparently today, and I just talked to the Center for Constitutional Rights, came back and said that they wanted Condoleezza Rice to visit Guantanamo.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, we talked about this, you and I, yesterday on the air, and David Poole, my producer, was in the room. I'm sure he's contacting your brother, Michael Ratner, ccr-ny.org, by the way, the website for the Center for Constitutional Rights. And probably as we speak, Ellen, David is working on getting Michael on the program here for next week. I'd like to take it up with him.
Yeah, I mean, he knows more details on this. But also in terms of the Organization of American States, this court, the Intercommission for Human Rights, Inter-American Commission for Human Rights, also said that they want member states to try and take some of these people who's, if they're sent back to their countries, which, of course, they have been doing in Guantanamo, many of these countries are just continuing to torture them.
Yeah. And in fact, in my opinion, that's the goal. You know, out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
Well, sure, they sent these guys back to the Saudis. Well, give them a break.
Right. And today is Friday, so today is the day that the Saudis have their public executions in Jeddah and Riyadh. They're chopping off heads
as we speak. Yeah, right by there, and when I was in Saudi Arabia, let me tell you why. Let them know my viewpoint very loudly.
But thousands of people show up for these executions. I mean, they do them in the stadiums and things. It's
incredible. They mainly do them in this Chop Chop Square place on Fridays. That is the place they do them. The president this morning also he had one of his, you know, show and tells at the White House. He was with veterans, military families. He then went after Congress for failing to pass the Defense Appropriations Act, and he then said, you know, Congress was failing to stand behind the troops. Well, if I recall, when we had the November elections, these guys couldn't even get a ballot They couldn't get that ballot. They couldn't get most of the appropriations bills passed at all, and they had to go to a huge omnibus appropriations bill. So, I mean, talk about chutzpah, which Tony Snow talked about. The president really has chutzpah on this one. And then, of course, he goes into his complete defense on the war again. But to go after the Democrats and to say, well, you know, the Congress still has an opportunity to do right by the men and women of uniform, when in fact they do have another week, and they do have 4 more weeks when they come back in October before it turns into a pumpkin. And there's something called a continuing resolution, which would continue to fund the troops. And of course, the president knows that they're going to do that.
Yeah. Plus, there's $2 trillion missing from the Pentagon budget. It's not like the Pentagon is short of loose change. If they need to do something, they can do it. And apropos of that, I find it mind-boggling that the president is condemning Congress for not having passed the piece of legislation that he's condemning the Democrats in Congress for not having passed the piece of legislation that they stayed up all night long trying to pass as the Republicans filibustered.
Of course.
It's mind-boggling.
And he's got chutzpah. To use Tony Snow's very own words. Also, former First Lady and Senator, New York Senator Hillary Clinton, went back. As you know, she had sent a letter to the Pentagon. She was answered by the Undersecretary for Policy, this guy, Eric Edelman. And then she writes back a letter today, which she sends directly to Gates, essentially saying that he ducked her question and made spurious. I'm not even pronouncing that correctly today. I must not be talking well. Spurious arguments to avoid addressing contingency planning in terms of the Iraq war. And then she also said that he had his priorities backwards. I mean, having the undersecretary guy answer her in that kind of political way, in my opinion, is completely outrageous to a United States senator.
Well, it's a demonstration of how the Bush administration and Karl Rove have successfully turned every branch of government, including the Department of Defense, into...
And look what's going on at Justice with what they're threatening to do or not to do around the issue of the congressional subpoenas.
Absolutely. They've turned all of them into instruments of the Republican Party trying to have their 100-year Republican permanent majority, their single-party rule. And for our listeners who haven't followed what Ellen and I are talking about here, Hillary Clinton sent a letter to the Secretary of Defense saying, do you guys have contingency plans for pulling out of Iraq? And if so, can you share some of the details of those with us? And was perfectly willing to take them in private or in secret session or whatever. The undersecretary.
It was a senatorial letter. They're sent all the time, those kinds of things.
Right. The Undersecretary of Defense sends back a letter saying, essentially, you are putting our troops at risk by raising this question. And that was just, it was a pure partisan political shot. And it's in, at least it was in the newspaper here, it's USA Today had a piece on it that made it look, essentially, like Hillary Clinton was, had one of those Geraldo Rivera moments where she's revealing the troop movements or something, and it's going to empower the enemy. It was incredible how they've turned this thing around and they're attacking her with it.
It's interesting. A friend of mine works in the White House on sort of the communications part of the Iraq war. And I have to tell you, he's in, you know, the same book that you gave me a positive blurb for. He is one of the best wordsmith idea people that they could have. His name is Mark Feifley, and he's great. He's the guy that's doing it.
Amazing. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Check out their website. Lots of great information over there. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on any topic you want. You want to talk about UFOs? We can talk about, although I have a feeling, impeachment and the war at the top of the list.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. To the Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
Well, even Ed Koch has taken a pass here. Ed Koch bailing out on support for the war, the former New York mayor.
He attacked war critics for their attempts to weaken the president last year. He says there's something terribly wrong with people seeking to demean and weaken the president in wartime, thereby strengthening our country's enemies. Yeah. Today over at Politico.com, he says, I'm bailing out. I will no longer defend the policy of keeping U.S. troops in Iraq. Well, you know, everybody has a time, I guess, when they finally get it. And they finally say, enough already. Enough already. Acting President Cheney, that's going to be tomorrow. President Bush will undergo a routine colonoscopy tomorrow. And will transfer power to Vice President Dick Cheney during the procedure to examine his head. It's expected to take about 2.5 hours, the chief White House spokesman said. So, anyhow, that's all the news that's fit to print, I guess. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Mark in Oakland, California. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, well, a couple of things, Tom. And I first want to thank you very much for one of the most enlightened shows on radio. And my 2 points. Number one, Senator Harry Reid, a little while back, promised to keep Congress in session during the August recess. I haven't heard anything about that. In light of Bush's predilections towards recess appointments, I certainly hope that he does keep Congress in session.
I do, too. I think the plan was that they were going to call them back for, like, one day a week, and if they could just get a quorum to pass some, like, you know, resolution saluting the Boy Scouts or something, whatever, that would be enough to prevent Bush from saying that there is a recess that he can use to make recess appointments. I recall him saying that he was going to do that. I don't know if he's followed through on it.
I have tried calling his office, and I have gotten nothing but voice messages, so I don't know.
Yeah, we'll try and track that down.
I hope we can track that down. The second thing, if I might, Tom, like you, I've spent a great deal of time living overseas, primarily in younger years of my life, and both in Japan and Indonesia. And, of course, Indonesia is the world's largest Muslim nation. I had a wonderful experience with those people, other than one time when I did not understand the culture and got into trouble, and it was actually stoned for my ignorance.
As in people threw stones at you.
Learned a great lesson from that. Pardon me? Yeah.
As in people threw stones at you, not pot.
Pardon me?
As in people threw stones at you, not pot.
Yeah, it was, I happened to, in my ignorance, I should have known better. I asked for some food and drink after a hot, hard morning of travel on an outer island, and happened to be sitting with the Haji and his family in a little village with the entire village underneath the house, and it was about noontime, and I was hungry, and I asked for food and water if there was some place, and it happened to be in the middle of Ramadan. And as I walked out of the village, the youngsters picked up pebbles and threw them at our feet.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand it at that time. I thought, oh, this is strange, you know. But later found out that it was simply due to my total ignorance that I got into trouble.
Well, it would be like back when I was a kid eating a hamburger in a Catholic school on Friday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I would, under any and all, in any way that you can, if you have children, and to your listeners, if you have children who are graduating high school, going into college, or a little bit older perhaps, send them out in the world with a backpack and a bare minimum of money.
Yeah,
and
it's a great experience.
Tell them to come back in a year and experience the world, the real
or have them join the Peace Corps or another good program like that that does that, you know, that helps get people out.
Do something other than just sit on your haunches and live off the benefits of your parents.
Yeah. No, Mark, very well said, and thank you very much for saying it. Jim in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Glad to have you back home in Michigan.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. In fact, I'm going to be spending the weekend with my family, my brothers and my mother and all kinds of relatives and whatnot. It's great.
Well, if you have as many brothers and sisters as I do, you could spend a lot of time here.
I have three of them. One of them's here with us.
I remember hearing about that. Tom, two quick things. In the last hour, you mentioned Bush's hypocrisy in deriding the Congress for failing to pass the pay increase for the military personnel. Because of the Republicans' filibuster.
the hypocrisy of Bush is even greater than that. This is the very same pay increase that a few months ago, because the Democrats wanted to increase pay to 3.5%, but Bush only wanted 3%. Bush publicly stated he would veto that. So his hypocrisy is just incredibly outstanding.
It's all about politics.
Of course,
I mean,
it
is. It's all about politics. And tragically, I mean, that sounds like a weak thing, but really it's all about trying to get single-party rule, and that's not a weak thing. That's a really terrible and dangerous thing. And that has been the goal of this bunch, you know, the Karl Rove faction of the Republican Party ever since the 60s. And they nearly did it. They nearly did it the first couple of years of this decade. And we saw the kind of damage that they did to this country, you know, the kind of damage that they did to the institutions of government from FEMA right on across the board. It is incredible. Jim, thanks for the call and for your insightful comment. Bill in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. First off, that executive order you were looking for the other day, that was 13-438.
I found it. If you go to whitehouse.gov and click on executive orders over on the left-hand side, it's the very top one, July 17th.
Right. The reason you're not seeing numbers there is because the minute he generates those orders, they go to the National Archive and they assign numbers. So the National Archive, www.archives.gov/FederalRegister/executive orders will list all the executive orders by number, including that one, with the full text, and it also has a subject index. I would encourage your listeners to go there and pick the subject of their choice and see how the vast majority of his executive orders undermine the common man.
Do they have a subject titled American Fascism?
Yeah. but I really wanted to talk about, you know, signing statements. I was going through and reading some of the Bush's signing statements, and practically every one that's confrontational at all, he's either making judicial determinations or he's saying what he thinks the law should be and how he's going to follow it. So that, first off, that's him legislating and judiciary, and as you will, I don't recognize him as having the authority to do either one of those. The second thing which kind of bothers me is they did a study here a couple of weeks ago where a number of agencies were either had to follow Bush's directives, signing statements, or follow the law, and they said that some significant portion of the agencies are, in fact, following the Bush directives instead of the law. Well, that sounds to me like we have a president ordering agencies to violate the law. I believe that's a crime.
It is. It is a crime, and, you know, FISA is the largest example of that, but there are literally hundreds, probably thousands of smaller examples. And Henry Waxman is the guy who's on this stuff, and he's all over it. And it's just going to be a question of how much press he can get, how much the American people attend to it, and whether or not Congress is going to decide to hold some of these folks like Harriet Myers, who are just, you know, thumbing their nose at Congress in contempt. And I think that they should. Bill, thanks for the call. Art in Seattle. Hey, Art.
Hello, Tom. Let's talk about this guy O'Reilly that you mentioned about an hour ago. This guy is so bad. It was about 2 months ago that he said that American troops had massacred German troops in 1944 in Malmedy in Belgium.
Yeah.
Now, this is a lie. And somebody old enough as I am to have been in World War II has to put this guy into some kind of a brace because he's a liar in Malmedy. December 44, American troops were captured by the Nazis. Almost 100 of them were massacred by the Nazis.
Right. No, I know. Bill O'Reilly had that completely upside down. The thing about O'Reilly is, you know, he's on his TV show, I think he's widely viewed as a buffoon, as a cartoon character, and his radio show is failing. We're on the same time he is, you know, noon to 3 Eastern time. He's on noon to 2 Eastern time. And we've actually had, you know, some stations replace him for us. And in many of the markets that we're in, we routinely beat his ratings. And not just our show. I mean, you know, all kinds of shows beat O'Reilly's ratings. His radio show's in the toilet. His TV show is frankly a tragic joke. It's I think it's viewed as comedy. You know, the unfortunate thing is that there's a small contingent of longtime Fox viewers, probably, you know, Prozac Nation. I don't know, those who are taking Soma or something, who think that there's some truth to what he's saying. But by and large, the guy is a cartoon character, and Keith Olbermann is doing a great job of characterizing that, pointing that out on an almost daily basis with his program Countdown. one of the best news programs on television. Coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Celebrities all come to see us, grateful they don't have to be us. Politicians play their best face card. Where is Bubba? Where's our leader? Where's our favorite lip reader? AWOL from the Texas National Guard. George W. told the nation, this is not an escalation. This is just a surge, short victory. Just to win my little war, I'm sending 20,000 more to help me save Iraq from Iraqis. If you're hunkered in Fallujah, wondering who it was who screwed you, wondering what became of shock and awe, you are feeling semi-certain it has to do with Halliburton, Dick Cheney's why you drew that fatal straw. But George W. told the nation, this is not an escalation, this is just a surge toward victory. Just to win my little war, I'm sending 20,000 more to help me save Iraq from Iraqis.
Indeed. Saving Iraq from the Iraqis. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Just a quick announcement for our folks here, the folks here at Celebration Cinema. This crowd, as far as the eye can see here, all these people, Schuller's Bookstores is bringing by a bunch of books around 2:30 this afternoon Eastern Time, which should be in the next 10 minutes or so, and we'll have a little book signing if anybody wants. So, and plus, we'll be at Schuller's North tonight at 7 o'clock, and I'll be giving a short talk and be doing a book sign as well there. We're broadcasting live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, my hometown, the place where I was born and and lived for about a year. I grew up in Lansing, just down the road, and WTKG, our local affiliate. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Eric in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
Actually, before I get started, since you just said you're from Lansing, just a quick, like, my parents are both from Lansing, East Lansing. But
oh, that's great.
That's neither here nor there. But I am a moderate Republican. I consider myself, but I am losing the faith. If you can, I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous, but I am, I do love your program. I do listen to my fair share of, conservative talk radio, but I love it. Listen to your program, Ring of Fire, all you guys at Air America Radio, just to go ahead and get a fair balance of everything. But,
thank you, Eric. You know, we need moderate Republicans like you to take back the Republican Party. The Republican Party used to be the loyal opposition. And they used to do a reasonably good job. But Dwight Eisenhower arguably was one of our best presidents in many regards, and a Republican. Teddy Roosevelt, a Republican, in my opinion, was probably one of the five best presidents in the history of this country. Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, one of the five best. The Republican Party really needs good people to take back the Republican Party, and I would encourage you to show up at the Republican Party meetings in your county and start participating with the Republican Party, if I may be so bold.
I'm going to try my best. To get your opinion on it. You know, Bush is always like, well, recently he's like, just wait until September so I can talk to General Petraeus, see what he wants to say and all that kind of stuff. But it seems as though, like, he's completely run out of options, and I just want to know your professional opinion. Like, what, like, if he does happen to come up with, like, you know, we're not doing so well, like, what do you think, Bush can do? It's like he's running out of options.
What's happening right now, Eric, as we speak, and what has been happening for the last 3 years or so, 3.5 years, is that a major and massive ethnic cleansing is going on in Iraq. Areas that were mixed neighborhoods, Sunni and Shia, which was a large portion of the country, actually, 40-50 years of secular governance in Iraq, where the government was not Islamic, it was not religious, overtly religious, has led to a pluralistic society, a sectarian society. In fact, Sunnis marrying Shias was not all that uncommon. And now, over the last three and a half years or so, what's happening is in those neighborhoods that are in areas that are largely Shia-dominated, the Sunnis are being executed. I mean, we're seeing 50, 60, 100 bodies a day showing up in the morgue just in Baghdad. It's happening all over the country. over 2 million people have fled their homes in Iraq and are still in Iraq. So in other words, Shia living in Sunni areas have moved to Shia areas, and Sunnis living in Shia areas have moved to Shia areas. And another 2 million people have fled the country. So the consequence of this is that as Iraq becomes more and more Balkanized, more and more broken up, the violence is decreasing. It's going to decrease because you don't have people basically trying to drive people out of their own neighborhoods. And,
right.
And Iraq is de facto being broken up into three countries. And so Bush is going to, in my opinion, he's going to point to this decrease in violence, which is going to happen probably over the next 6 months as this ethnic cleansing reaches a crescendo, and say, see, everything's fine. And the tragedy of it is that in the course of this, you know, 500,000 people died, 4 million refugees were created. It's the worst refugee crisis on earth. And that's in my opinion, what's happening, Eric. Thanks a lot for the call. Glenn in Grand Rapids is here in the studio with us. Glenn, we have just a few seconds. You want to make a quick point?
Yeah, I want
to... turn on your mic.
I want to make sure that people are aware that I keep on talking about this to several people in town here, that recently... I keep on telling people about the fact that this is the only plant that really, like, goes towards...
Got to make your points a little quicker, but you can summarize it for me during the break, and I'll tell our listeners, you know, what your point was. Well, good try there, Glenn. We appreciate it.
Oh, well.
Coming up on radio. Yeah, there you go. Coming up at the break at the bottom of the hour. No problem at all. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Celebration Cinemas, WTKG, on Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
She meet me a la ching bong, she sends it on. Anything goes. He won't eat loot you shock.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Shannon in Cache, Arkansas. You are on the air. Hey, Shannon.
Hi. The reason I was calling is because I heard on CNN that apparently the Iraqi Congress is taking a month off for summer vacation.
Well, it's we might call it summer vacation. They call it, you know, hiding out from 135 degree heat.
Our soldiers are over there in 135 degree weather. You know, I've heard so little about this, and I'm really disturbed. I don't know if I'm just overreacting or if this.
No, you're not. You're not. And there are many Americans. There are many of us who are very, very concerned about the fact that the Iraqi Parliament has done virtually nothing.
You don't hear much on the news. This should be mentioned every day. You know, people, you don't hear them really complaining much about this. And to me, it should be brought up every day. It should be put to a stop. I mean, you know, how many of our soldiers are going to die in that month period? I mean, how many of their people are going to die in that month period while they're all on vacation?
I'm right there with you, and I didn't mean to make light of it. The fact of the matter is that the conditions in the summer in Iraq and most of the Middle East are absolutely brutal, they're as brutal for our soldiers as they are for the Iraqi Parliament. And if these guys want our soldiers to be there to preserve their political power, the very least they can do is use that political power to do something that's going to allow our soldiers to get the heck out of town.
Exactly. And that's all the point I want to make. And I love your show. I just recently started listening to it. And I think you do a great service to this country just by letting people come on and say how they feel. And I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
Please pass the good word along. We appreciate your listening. Pat in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm sorry if I'm beating a dead horse again, but this is about the impeachment story.
Right.
I would like to remind every Democrat who's tepid about doing impeachment that the Republicans, knowing full well that they didn't have the votes in the Senate to convict President Clinton when they started the impeachment process, did it anyway and used it as a clarion call that they are the moral ones and they're standing up on high ground. Well, I say that who cares if we can do it or not? We're taking a stand on what's right and how criminal this – we have a more righteous stand than certainly the Republicans did when they chose impeachment.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, what's interesting is that yesterday and the day before, when we had Bruce Fein and Paul Craig Roberts on, two people with absolutely impeccable conservative and Republican credentials, both of them calling for the immediate impeachment of Bush and Cheney. They were both actually going beyond what, in my opinion, going beyond what Liz Holtzman has said on this program, who also, she was one of the authors of the Articles of Impeachment against Nixon, as a member of Congress, and she wrote a book on impeachment, which is an absolutely brilliant book. But they were even going beyond what she was saying, because what she is saying is, you know, let's do this to say to the world and to say to the American people, we will not tolerate these kind of violations of the Constitution. Bruce Fein is saying, let's do this because we have to do this in order to reduce the level of power that's been grabbed by the executive branch. And Paul Craig Roberts is saying, let's do this because these guys are not idiots. They realize that their popularity is in the tank, and they have no intention of losing the 08 elections, and they're going to do something really, really, really nasty if we don't get them out of power. I mean, these two guys are actually saying, go for the whole enchilada. Try to get the Senate to go along with it. Try to get 66 votes in the Senate. And I think Bernie's right that there aren't 66 votes in the Senate, but you never know. You just never know. I mean, in April of 1970, I think it was 73 was the year that Nixon was impeached and resigned. In April, nobody thought it was possible. None of the Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee voted to go along with the subpoena for the White House tapes. They got the White House tapes because the Supreme Court ruled that they had to give them to them. They got the White House tapes. John Dean came in, the guy who has the job that Harriet Myers most recently had, who refuses to testify. Nixon allowed Dean to testify. He spilled the beans. And within 3 or 4 months, it was obvious that there were the votes in the Senate, there were the votes in the House, and at that point, Nixon said, that's it, I'm not even going to go through the process, I'm out of here. And I agree with you. I think that if the Democrats in the House of Representatives would get up on their hind legs and say, that's it, we've had enough, we're going to begin impeachment proceedings, or against both of them, frankly. I think Dennis Kucinich's articles of impeachment against Cheney is an honorable and good first step, but frankly, I believe that we need to have articles of impeachment against both of them drafted and introduced into the House of Representatives. And like I said, this is an area where Bernie and I disagree. It's probably the only area of 5,000 topics where we disagree. He's going to have to hear from his constituents, not from me. I mean, I don't even live in Vermont. And Bernie does listen to his constituents. So, you know, we'll see. You know, I have a lot of faith in his good sense and good judgment. He's a very good man.
Well, thanks for your work, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Karen in L.A. Hey, Karen.
Hello.
Oh, Kevin, I'm sorry. Kevin in Los Angeles. I'm reading the screen.
Yeah, I have a question. What exactly is an executive order? Does it have the force of law, like a piece of legislation passed by Congress? And if so, how is it that the president can legislate from the White House?
That's a damn good question. And, you know, I think I know the answer to that, but I'm not going to lay it out because I might be wrong. I'll tell you what, Kevin, David, our producer, will track down sometime over the next week, a constitutional expert. In fact, I just given him on yesterday, the day before, a constitutional authority that I thought would be a really great person to be a regular on the program, that we can, you know, a law school professor that we can ask those kinds of questions of. And that should be at the top of the list because it's one of those things that, you know, it's like the air, you don't notice it. You know, they've been around for a long, long time, and we all just kind of take them for granted that they have. My understanding of executive orders is that because the president is essentially the chief executive of the executive branch of government, that they were orders that he can give to people within the executive branch of government, the Justice Department, the Defense Department, whatnot, that they would have to follow. And that the purpose of their following them would be ultimately to fulfill the laws that Congress passes, because the Congress passes the laws, the executive branch is charged with executing the laws. But my understanding may be very incomplete and imperfect, so let's leave that on the table for a few days, and we'll try to do a little in-depth investigation that next week, okay?
All right, thanks.
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. And learn something new every day. Sometimes you learn that you didn't know what you thought you knew, and that's one for me. Dan in Seattle. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to bring global warming back to the topic. Your conversation earlier in the hour about using sunlight kind of strikes what I'm kind of concerned about. If you look at just the calories that it takes to produce food, it takes 2 petrol calories to produce 1 calorie of protein from soy. It takes 3 petrol calories to create 1 calorie of protein from corn and wheat, and it takes 54 petrol calories to create 1 calorie of protein from beef. Now, if you kind of look at the fact that 2% of the corn grown in America is eaten by people, and 77% of the corn grown in America is fed to cattle, I mean, you start kind of seeing the total global impact of eating meat. There's a really great report out there that was done for the UN. The World Bank was connected to it, and so was the EU. It's called Livestock's Long Shadow, and it goes in depth on all of the different impacts of meat eating on
the global
planet.
This is part of the reason why I have not eaten meat since I was 16 years old. You know, it's been 40 years that I've not eaten meat.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And we raised all three of our kids as vegetarians, and all three of them still are. Two of them occasionally will eat fish, but the impact on the planet is tremendous of animal agriculture, not just on the consumption of resources, but on the production of waste. It's mind-boggling.
The two best authors
on this are Francis Moore LePay and John Robbins have done some great writing on this topic.
Yes, one of the interesting things that comes out of the paper that I report or suggest that Livestock's Long Shadow is that the energy used to grow meat in the globe is more than all other transportation consumption combined. So really, if you want to impact global warming, stopping eating meat will do more for that than not driving.
Not only that, you'll lose weight and you'll feel better. Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Carlos in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Carlos.
Oh, yeah, it's me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, thanks, Tom. I met you before at the College of Santa Fe, and I think your program is just great. If you don't keep it up, what are we going to do? You're great. But I'm saying, what if they kicked out George W. Bush and Cheney, and Ms. Pelosi would take over as the presidency, then she could choose some really high-qualified people to help her in these constitutions, because I know that she's a great promoter of the Constitution, and that's it for me right now today. Thanks for Friday of Anything Goes.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling, Carlos, and I agree. I think Nancy Pelosi would make a great president of the United States, and I'm a big fan of Nancy Pelosi's. Brian in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. You talk impeachment. I am in favor of impeachment. Maybe it's even dire, but how do you feel is the best way to go about that? I feel that going for 9/11, it's such a big thing, and Building 7 is pretty obvious. I don't remember how many stories it was, but it was brought down that later that afternoon, and I think there is evidence that definitely Building 7 was not affected by the towers coming down, so that means that...
Brian, while I agree with you that 9/11 stinks and we need a serious investigation of it, and there's a whole lot more there that meets the eye, and the 9/11 Commission was as much whitewashed as it was anything...
Do you think that the opposition is too big on 9/11?
I don't think that that's the thing to use to impeach him. I think the thing to use to impeach him is the FISA Act, the violations of the FISA Act, spying on Americans. I mean, there's a whole series of very explicit crimes that this administration's committed.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to my producers, David Poole and Louise Hartman. To Phil Tower here at WTKG in Grand Rapids for hosting us here at the Celebration Cinema. To Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner, making everything work there in New York City, bringing the program to you via Air America Radio. To Sue Nethercutt in our chat room and Ben Birch over at White Rose Society, and to our advertisers and to our radio affiliates, our radio stations. Please let them know you're listening and that you appreciate the show. And to you for listening. Thank you so much. The point that the next to last caller, I think, was making about, you know, we really need to be attending to the planet is also the point that Glenn from Grand Rapids here was making at the bottom of the last hour. And I told Glenn I'd summarize his point on the air. And it was, hey, you know, this is the only planet we've got. It's a pretty rare thing. that such a planet would come along, and we really need to be taking care of it. And it is so true. And just a reminder to the folks here in Grand Rapids and in Western Michigan, tonight at 7 o'clock, I'll be at Schuler's North signing books from 7 to 8 o'clock that night. One other quick heads up, Bernie Sanders' website, and if you want to contact Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is Bernie's website. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, toll-free all across the United States. And Ruth in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Ruth, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I just wondered what your thoughts are about the likelihood of this latest directive being used against members of Congress.
I think it's extremely unlikely. Like everything else, just like, frankly, again, I hate the analogy, but just like Hitler did with the Enabling Acts, first they use criminal sanctions like that against people who actually are criminals and who probably justifiably such sanctions should be used against. And then they use them against the people who are in the gray areas. And then they start using them against their political enemies, and then they start using them against you and me, and then, you know, at the end of it, they go after, like Hitler, you know, drove all the communists out of the parliament in Germany, then they go after the politicians. But the politicians won't be first, because they're the ones who would fight back. But I wouldn't be surprised to see it being used in ways that probably many of us would actually applaud. And you know, therefore, all more the tragedy. Schuler's South is where I'm going to be signing books. Is that right, Phil? Okay, I'm sorry, I said Schuler's North. I'll be at Schuler's South at 28th Street Southeast. So my apologies if I've identified the wrong bookstore. Ruth, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. You're welcome. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Chris in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. It's a great weekend coming. I'm here in Michigan visiting family. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I keep hearing November, give us till November from Bush and his cronies. And to me...
Well, it was September. Now the number two guy in Iraq is saying November. That's in today's newspapers. They want to push it back another month.
Well, to me, it's just painfully obvious. I don't know. Maybe I'm jaded. But it seems to me they're just buying time, postponing, putting this off until they can get their pieces in, all their ducks in a row to attack us sometime in October, because they know damn well that if we get our soldiers out of Iraq, they'll have no reason to come over here and bomb us. They'll have no reason to come over here to hate us for our freedoms and anything else that they keep throwing out there. I really believe these guys are instigating something, kind of like your guest yesterday was saying, that they have no intention of giving this kind of power to another president, and especially not a Democrat. They have no intention of losing.
Yeah, it concerns me tremendously, Chris, when I hear that kind of conversation from people who've been inside, as Paul Craig Roberts was, inside the Reagan administration. You know, he said, I've walked the corridors of power. I know how it works, and people don't give up that kind of power easily. And it is chilling to hear. The two events that seem to me to be the real benchmarks in Iraq that nobody's talking about are, number one, the oil laws that would privatize the oil and give most of the oil in Iraq over to big multinational, transnational, global oil companies. I was interested to read in today's paper, ExxonMobil, for example, 70% of their total revenue comes from outside the United States. This is not an American company anymore. If you define an American company as one that does principally their business in the United States, over half of General Electric's revenues come from outside the United States, and they own NBC. I mean, you know, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. And so, number one, the oil law. And number two, they want the ethnic cleansing to be finished and let the Iraqis do the dirty work. Let them murder each other. And when that's done, then presumably the violence will ramp down. I think that, you know, frankly, in the most Machiavellian way possible, that's the path that they're pursuing and the clock that they're trying to run out. Ralph in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Ralph.
Yeah, Tom. You keep talking about the German push, I'll call it. And when your guest was on yesterday, Paul Craig Roberts.
Yeah.
The reason that the Bushies and the neocons are not worried about the 2008 election is they don't plan to have a 2008 election. Look at where the U.S. Army is. More and more going overseas. The tour of duty was to be half here, half there under the new bill. That got eliminated. The Blackwater people are now, what, 100,000? Many of those are not Americans, so they have no idea of it owing any allegiance to the Constitution. You've got a bunch of people in government who think, according to Senator Lee's cross-questioning, that their allegiance is to the president, not to the Constitution.
As Sarah Taylor implied.
Bingo. Yeah. You have a number of generals appointed in the Army, not who are at the top of the list, but who are below that and loyal to Bush.
Yeah, in terms of quality performance. No, I get your point, Ralph, and it's a grim vision for the future, and one that we have to do everything we can to prevent from happening. And the way to do that, frankly, is to get involved in the political process, to wake people up, to get out there, to talk about these issues, and make sure that America is not caught sleeping the way other nations have been caught sleeping when their liberties have been taken from them. Thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks again to WTKG and Phil Tower for hosting us, the folks here at Celebration Cinema. All of you, thanks for showing up, all our guests out here in the studio audience. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.